You were basically the only reporter in the room for the entirety of this trial with former Rensselaer County DA Abel Love. And I just wanted to know your analysis of the outcome.
Well, my first reaction was, wow, that was fast. You know, it was less than 3 hours of deliberation. It was probably less than even maybe 2.5 when you consider to go back and actually start deliberating, you know, the process of announcing, you know, when you're going to come out and all that. You know, this was a 2-week trial. One judge I used to cover, Judge Dan Lamont over in Albany, used to say that generally for each week of trial, that's usually a day of deliberation. Now, that's obviously not always the case. We've seen lots of trials where, you know, people have come back in just a few hours. But this was a 3-count indictment, not the largest indictment, but a very, very complicated case, confusing in many ways because of the involvement of multiple grand jury appearances, 2 different counts of official misconduct, and obviously the perjury, which was fairly simple on its face. But I thought they were going to have trouble getting a conviction on the perjury count. And the reason for that is that perjury, particularly first degree perjury, you have to prove intent when someone is, you know, intended to lie. I've seen cases over the years where somebody outside appearances have made statements that clearly appear to be a lie, or have said one thing during one court appearance and then the direct opposite during another court appearance. And those people have not been convicted. When Jessica Hall gets up there and testifies, this is, of course, Abel Love's former chief assistant. When Jessica Hall testified that she misspoke about, you know, immunity being granted to Joshua Komitol, and that she told Joel Abel Love that gives him cover, at least at face value, that it gives a reason for a judge or a juror to say, okay, well, maybe he didn't know that or not. The prosecution was very big on saying she was not necessarily involved in this of the Komitol case, but I think that testimony, someone saying, oh no, he didn't lie, I told him that. Whether or not you believe her or not, whether or not you believe Joel Abel Love or not, it gives a reason for someone to say they had reasonable doubt. And then you have the official misconduct counts, one of which was involving the photograph with bullet trajectory, which the prosecution said Abel Love should have put that before the grand jury. Maybe that you could speculate that maybe the judge didn't want to set a precedent where a prosecutor could be convicted for not putting all the evidence in. Again, if I'm just speculating as to what he could have been thinking. And then you have the other count, which is a granting immunity to, you know, Sergeant French. And this one is really, I think, the one I actually thought he would convict him of one of the lower counts. This is my personal opinion, not speaking for the Times Union at all. Anyway, I thought basically that was something that would probably happen, that there maybe would be a, you know, a split decision on that. And I think people I spoke to, kind of a number of people probably thought that that was a possibility, but it came out very clear that this was, oh, I find you not guilty, I find you not guilty, I find you not guilty. And then it's right, just like that, a 4-year case is over. Gertha Dapas, who's the mother of Edson, evidence that she wasn't surprised. When I asked her, you know, what do you think of this? She felt, obviously, in her case, she was not happy, but she also felt sort of like the fix was in. And I guess that was the concern. If you were going to be, you know, skeptical of this verdict, one of the things people were probably concerned about is that the same judge had dismissed the case a couple of years ago before it was reinstated. And when you come back and there's a verdict that quickly, it does make you wonder, was this ever going to be something that was going to be looked at objectively? He's the judge. He was a non-jury trial. He gets to make the call. You know, we certainly can't get into his head, but certainly the people who are not happy with this verdict in many ways feel the fix was in, that this was something the judge was never going to convict him of. And when you acquit someone within 3 hours, those questions are not going to go away. Because, you know, it's a case that was about a cover-up, an alleged cover-up, and then it goes before a judge, and that judge acquits the person in less than 3 hours. the fact that this case was brought in the first place and that it went as far as it did could potentially serve as a deterrent to district attorneys from doing the same type of thing. Even though, just to be clear, Abelov has been convicted of no legal wrongdoing, he still faces a federal lawsuit. But I think...
Can you just speak one more moment on like the significance of that, of a former district attorney going on?
And that's what I, you know, the verdict notwithstanding, the attorney general's office put a case together against a sitting DA. That case was certainly out there when he ran for re-election and he lost the election. And I do think the fact that it went as far as it did, that it went to closing arguments and a verdict before a judge, that Joel Abelov had to go through this entire experience, I do think that one can make the argument that that could certainly be a deterrent for future district attorneys if they wanted to do this, to say, okay, yes, on one hand, the judge acquitted Joel Abelov of every charge, but on the other hand, look what happened here. You know, there was a lot of attention. There was a trial. There was, the facts came out of both sides. And certainly there was sunlight on a process that, frankly, there's a chance that this might have just been no build. And, you know, maybe nobody would have said anything after the fact. You know, the fact that it went this far, I think, could be a deterrent to future district attorneys who may say, I don't want to have to go to trial. I don't want this to happen. And I don't want to, you know, have this be part of my story. And look, you know, people are going to have different opinions as to whether or not Joel Abelov should have been convicted or not. But the fact that a former district attorney went on trial for 2 weeks in the same courthouse where he once, you know, held office, I think that in and of itself is a big deal. And I think the fact that they brought the case is a big deal. When I spoke to Mr. Abelov yesterday after the trial ended, he felt that this was, you know, he's been vindicated. He felt that, you know, this was a political witch hunt. One thing I will say is I think there's a natural inclination when you hear the details of this case to think that, we take the position that, you know, Abelov did it to sort of cover up for the police, because he wanted to help the police out, or because they're so close. But I think one thing that certainly emerged from the trial is that this case appeared to be, you know, from the more you heard the evidence and the more you heard the prosecution and Abelov's own testimony, you know, what seemed to be, you know, a turf battle, as if to say, I don't want you in my backyard. I'm the DA. And I make the decisions here, not you, allegedly, you know, and I want you out. And this is my jurisdiction, and I make the decisions in my jurisdiction, you don't. That it maybe not have been about the fact that it was a, you know, quote unquote, alleged cover up for police as much as he allegedly did that because it was his county, his turf. I mean, there's the testimony where he said, according to Shane Hugg, something to the effect of, I'm the district attorney, you know, it's my decision, it's his jurisdiction, his way, his call, so to speak.
Yeah, there's even like a, you know, editorial piece from the New York Times from May of 2016 talking about the upstate New York's defiant district attorney in terms of this sort of same thing of like he holding on to this power, right? Like,
correct.
Hold on to his role.
Yeah, and I do think that was a big part of this. If for a DA, it's not, or it is about protecting the cops, regardless of what their motivation is. Well, look what happened. You got on trial. You know, the AG's office came forward and they brought a case, they brought it to trial, and that is going to follow you around, whether that's fair or not. I was under the impression, based on my past experience covering non-jury trials, which is a judge trial, you know, a bench trial, I thought like when the summations ended yesterday, like everybody was going to leave. And essentially, we wouldn't find out the verdict for a week, whether the judge spent an hour or 5 hours or 5 minutes deliberating. Usually, that's how bench trials work. It's not, they usually come right back. But this was something whereas, you know, the judge made up his mind. And once we saw that the parties and the court officers were sticking around we kind of got a feeling that maybe this is going to come. And obviously, you know, you saw if you were there yesterday or this week, there's been a large presence of protesters outside. You had, you know, people banging drums. And I do think, though, that this case, I'm surprised it hasn't gotten more attention. Obviously, it was in the New York Times originally, but I was kind of thought like, wow, this should maybe be a national story.